It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 5 years has shared with us her extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is Dialogue Conspiracy number 232, August the 30th, 1976. The show today, the broadcast, is going to be about the YAF, the Young Americans for Freedom, their role that they played in the Kennedy assassination, the true story behind the Kennedy assassination. It wasn't Castro that was after John Kennedy, but the YAF, heavily organized military intelligence. This information was suppressed by the Warren Commission and just sandwiched into Volume 18. And I'll give you some examples of how they suppressed this. It was also suppressed by major researcher Mark Lane in Rush to Judgment. And in lectures the last 13 years, he's never mentioned one of these witnesses that I know of. And suppressed by Sylvia Marr, the expert in quotes of the Kennedy assassination, who cross-filed the documents, the exhibits, and the names of witnesses called, who deleted all but two names out of 19 that were part of a military intelligence operation. At the time John Kennedy was killed, the same YAF was linked to Watergate. Douglas Caddy, the co-founder of YAF, was at Mullen Associates, where the Watergate operations were planned. And then it goes into Spiro Agnew with his anti-Semitic foundation and into the roots of the SLA in Chicago. So today, basically, we're going to do one subject on the YAF. Next week, I'm going to do a broadcast. I think next week I'll do the entire 45 minutes, unless some other emergency comes up in the meantime, on the murder of a man in Los Angeles, Robert Duke Hall. And I'm mentioning it a week in advance because if you see any articles in the newspaper in the weeks ahead, in this next week ahead, save them, or any in the house that you have now, don't throw them away. A detective in Los Angeles was slain, like Sam Giancana or Rosselli, John Rosselli. He was sitting in his kitchen. A bullet came through and killed him. He was a detective that was linked to Robert Vesco, to an organization of murder for hire, an organization that has done a lot of illegal activities, criminal activities. But the important thing about Mr. Hall is that when he died, he left 200 tape recordings that are just about having a two-thirds of Hollywood, in quotes, walking on eggshells. This story involves not only link to Vesco, but to the Beverly Hills Police Department. A Beverly Hills police captain resigned today, a surprise resignation, or rather Saturday, August 28th. He resigned, Mr. Captain Jack Eggers, a veteran of 17 years. The important thing about this that I will stress next week is that I know for a fact that the rock musicians and the rock bands have been drugged, and many have been murdered, and there have been near murders and planting drugs against these musicians. And seven leaders of musical groups had accused Mr. Hall of supplying the drugs to the rock musician groups. And I think this may be the biggest clue to what happened to people, recording artists that were here at Monterey Pop and then died afterwards. I have a list of over 30 to 40 rock musicians or jazz musicians that have died in strange deaths that should be investigated. And this man was supplying the drugs, and he worked through a Beverly Hills pharmacist, doctors in Beverly Hills, and these people's names were in the hands of law enforcement, and they haven't ever made arrests or done anything about it. His co-partner is a stockbroker from Century City who was just sentenced to a prison term for smuggling guns and prostitutes to Robert Vesco in Costa Rica, and they were charged with such crimes as blackmail, extortion, and gambling. And the Los Angeles Times had one article on the 28th about this gentleman, Robert Duke Hall, but I'm getting from the Salt Lake City Tribune, believe it or not, the bulk of this and the interesting links of also being involved with the rock musicians, supplying them their drugs, and being part of a group that could have smeared the drugs to these rock musicians. E. Howard Hunt left Washington, D.C. at the time the men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel and flew right out to stay with an attorney by the name of Mr. Jackson in Beverly Hills. And Hunt and Liddy, who not only worked with the Robert Vesco team, the White House team, the known as Watergate, they worked in Beverly Hills at the time of Dr. Lewis Fielding's offices being burglarized. They work with the Los Angeles police, and they work with the Beverly Hills police, because remember, it was the Beverly Hills police that charged Elmer Davis with the entry and said that they falsified the evidence that he went into these offices. And the truth is that the Watergate plumbers not only went to the Wabash, there's a marvelous article by George O'Toole now, on the stands at this time in Penthouse, Watergate on the Wabash in Indiana, that involves Mr. Ruckel's house and the Justice Department and the way that congressmen get into office and out of office and get smeared and discredited and burglarized, and that's the theme of what I'm going into next. Read O'Toole's article on the Wabash. Also, We Magazine has an article by Ed Sanders on cattle mutilations, and it's a marvelous article. It's on the stands now. Read those two. Save articles on Robert Duke Hall. We'll go back into the rock musicians, the Watergate, Hunt, Liddy, and Vesco next week. Well, this week there was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle and in the other papers I take titled, The Senate Moves 33 Emergencies, the 1933 Emergency Act is going to be ending. And that would sound like good news unless you followed day to day what these people in Washington are doing. The Senate quietly passed a bill this week that would end the state of national emergency. It was put in by Franklin Roosevelt when he formed the New Deal program at the time of Depression. It was used by Harry Truman, Korean War. Richard Nixon used it twice. The emergency powers take control of 470 laws, the right of the president to seize property, seize commodities, the means of production, restrict travel, control the post office. And the list of the methods they have of control over people in the state of emergency is very interesting, because when you take each one of those items, like the seizing of property or organizing and controlling production or restricting travel, you realize that the intelligence community since World War II has developed to such a stage that the electronic age and the clandestine operations combined can control events in such a way that Congress can vote for a state of emergency and the president doesn't have to appear like a dictator, because Congress will unanimously get the National Emergency Act going. Hitler was elected by the people, and a state of emergency could be put in the same way. The FBI, according to newly released documents, are known racists. They're anti-labor, and they've used organized crime to stop the labor unions from becoming more balanced with minorities. And there's every reason to believe, document on the expertise of the CIA, that these two organizations wouldn't think twice to help put people into Congress, as that article on the Wabash shows they do, that will vote for these emergency measures, so that even though this national emergency bill would get off the books, the members in Congress will be so padded within 2 years that there'll be no way that they wouldn't vote for the emergency measure, given a massive amount of propaganda by the news media. The intelligence community has been admittedly going into killings, kidnappings they're charged with now, the FBI. They falsify evidence at home and abroad and even against each other, such as Mr. Tolson, who passed away, and they wrote his power of attorney for him, the FBI, and one of them wrote and forged his signature. And they can create enough mental zombies and have agents out in the field who are constantly avoiding prosecution and confinement. And they control labor and organizations and kill labor leaders. So that there's no reason for a martial law plan, really, unless we're bombed from another country, and I doubt that would happen first, so that the Congress can make martial law, and they have all the muscle, and they're getting ready to do it now. There's an agent in New York, Scott Meredith, New York book agent, publisher, who wrote recently, David Miller, who's a researcher and writer in Florida, and he submitted a book, a compilation of Watergate stories, including the ones I did on the SLA and the Watergate Martha Mitchell kidnapping and many other excellent articles. And Mr. Meredith wrote a letter to Mr. Miller saying that the articles on conspiracy are no longer timely, and they're not no use to a publisher because the establishment is doing their own digging and house-cleaning. And he wrote in his letter, it's impossible to believe that the CIA would start violence and ask people to beg for more security. Well, he says that they're doing their own digging. The fact remains that people like Richard Helms, against instructions from people around him and members of Congress, that didn't dig into the germ warfare. They kept vials of germs that they were supposed to destroy, and they also, he alone was responsible for destroying 4,000 or more lists of people that were turned into possible suicides and epilepsies and insanities and mental cases that are walking in our community, and God knows how they've suffered because they unknowingly were given these experimental drugs, and there's no cures. So the Senate erases a 33-year law, the 1933 laws, but that doesn't mean that we're not in always a possible state of emergency. It doesn't halt the construction of that $15 million hospital at Travis Air Force Base. It's on a secret 84 acres, and it's probably constructed by now. They've been doing it 2 years. You remember how Lyndon Johnson got the wrong information about the Gulf of Tonkin, and that escalated the war in Vietnam. Well, the same intelligence community is educating Mr. Carter. They take Jimmy Carter and show him a tree being cut down, and they say this is what the Koreans do, and then they get a candidate for president who immediately says, I'm for the intelligence community, the CIA is doing a good job, and we should send our troops into Korea. So the intelligence community that caused the loss of lives in South Vietnam, landscapes are altered, millions of dollars of lives, millions of lives lost, and weather tampered with. I mean millions when I say the whole of Southeast Asia, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, the whole area, people displaced and people dead and people starving and diseased. It would add up, the figures would be tremendous. I'm not just talking about the 400,000 or more American lives. And there's still men crawling around there on their hands and legs like spiders because the intelligence community could give Lyndon Johnson, not that Johnson was a saint, but we have the same intelligence community. And then there's another catch to the Senate reversing this emergency measure if you read it carefully. There's a clause that says it's still in effect for 2 years. Well, you know, these dogs have to be hiding something. Why can't they erase it tomorrow? If it's a bad bill, if we don't need it anymore, why tomorrow? Why can't they change in 1976? If Carter's elected and it's dropped and he doesn't want a state of emergency, if he doesn't believe their information, are they afraid of Carter? I think they're afraid of Jimmy Carter because what if he changed? Remember, the intelligence community supported Castro in Cuba and helped him in the fight against Batista, and then they were kicked out. And it was John Conley last week that said that he's deathly, quote, deathly afraid of Jimmy Carter. So they're making a law that will be good 2 years from now. So even if you have a new president, you have a Watergate, Roosevelt, Nixon, Truman law that shouldn't really be on the books, and they have a clause, a two-year clause. And I don't trust the two-year clause. I don't trust the way the intelligence community brief Jimmy Carter, so that when you repeal the old national emergency law, what it does, it gives book publishers like Scott Meredith, he's only one, the chance to say when you submit a book, oh, that's ridiculous. He wrote a 6-page letter to David Miller. It's ridiculous to think we're still in a state of people usurping the government, everybody's being investigated, and all the truths are coming out, so there's no more conspiracy problems. And then book publishers can turn down books that get to the roots of where the conspiracies are still taking place. And the National Emergency Plan, whether it's on or off, we know that the governor of California, Governor Brown, is training National Guards constantly. The SWAT teams are spreading all over the United States, even to little cities like Davis, California. I've talked to people from little cities around the country where there's absolutely nothing to justify SWAT teams, and they're forming them in those teams. So the governor of this state, and I mentioned him because he's supposed to be the most liberal around the country, has been training these teams, these National Guard teams that are linked to the martial law plans down in Georgia. So they certainly have no reason not to keep this going, and it soothes the public. It puts them to rest. It feels that nobody's going to pull a fast one on them. Your emergency bills are over. Martial law is a thing of the past, and that isn't true because we always have to keep alert, and we can't trust these people to say it. When they put a two-year clause, that alone and what they did with the briefing of Jimmy Carter or other persons, even calling Gerald Ford about the tree incident, should they cut it down without the details, as long as they're running, these people running the CIA with that kind of mentality, martial law is a fact that hangs over us all the time. And so long as congressmen are assembled and funded by secret societies or such as the Hughes Medical Institute, These congressmen are all going to vote for immediate war against a certain country like North Korea when the vote comes. The conduits keep flowing to the congressmen so that they would willingly throw in a state of emergency. They're not their own bosses, and this accounts, I think, for the total silence in Congress to the major assassinations and conspiracies that are going on between the United Press, UPI, and the Associated Press, keeping a silence on the new evidence of the investigations that seeps out all the time, just like those two articles I wrote, just mentioned to you about the Wabash, the one in Indiana. The Watergate and Wabash involves, again, G. Gordon Liddy and Ruckelshaus from Indiana. The Congress isn't doing, the Justice Department isn't prosecuting, the major media isn't picking it up, the articles come out, the exposures come out, the documentation comes out. So there has to be some reason to believe that these men are selected ahead of time, and I want to go into the selection of congressmen ahead of time and the plans a certain gentleman has for 1978. We saw in 1946 a wave of congressmen put in by Hughes and Aerospace, and there was Richard Nixon, who was still in the Navy and flown out to California to meet with Howard Hughes. John Dewey, funded by the CIA, and his running mate was Earl Warren, the notorious head of the Warren Commission that covered up the Kennedy killing. And Earl Warren was recognized and discovered, as well as Richard Nixon, by Murray Chotiner. Gerald Ford was on the list of people recently that was funded by the Hughes Medical Institute as a fund for money for politicians. And there was Leon Jaworski from the CIA Foundation, the Anderson Foundation. All of these men working with the CIA, one supposed to be investigating congressmen, and he's in the CIA. Congressmen like Richard Nixon and Smathers of Florida, selected by the Hughes organization, which is a cover for the CIA, Gerald Ford selected by them and appointed president by Nixon. And what you're getting now is the total inability of Congress to function as the Constitution set it down. A man like Mr. Smathers of Florida, who was selected by the same people as Richard Nixon to run for the House of Representatives the same time Nixon did, and then to run for the Senate the same time Nixon did, employed a secretary or worker known as Mary Jo Kopechne, who eventually, her death was responsible for Ted Kennedy not running for president. And her roommate, Mary Jo's roommate, worked for Bobby Baker, Lyndon Johnson's cohort, and she also was murdered. So what you get are these links going back to an early wave of many, many congressmen selected between the years 1946 and 48, and presidential candidates, people like John Dewey and Earl Warren, and the scene of them reaching together gets closer with every article and every document that comes out. That seems that there's a very small, tight group that has been running this show since 1970, for a long time since World War II up to 1976, with plans into the future. There was a list in Playboy. I mentioned that article last week or the week before, a new article out on Howard Hughes and Hughes Medical Institute and the funding of politicians. And there's a list of 30 congressmen that were funded through the Hughes organization. And these congressmen are important because they again appear under a list that a Mr. Vogery has to put other men in Congress of their same ilk. Now, I want to refer to a man last week or 2 weeks ago. I spoke of Emil Ludwig, the Brazilian, the richest man in America who lives in Brazil with his direct links to U.S. military and oil industry, the Hughes organization, and to Ronald Reagan, and espionage, labor, slave labor on his property, secret slaves. And this week, I want to talk about a new name besides Ludwig, and you might write it down. You may be hearing more about it in the week or years to come. His name is Richard A. Vogery, V-I-G-U-E-R-I-E, Richard Vogery. And I wouldn't have known about him except for a friend in Houston who sends me articles from the Houston Post. He's described in the Houston Post August 6, 1976. And if you want to look that up in your library, a lot of people that listen to the shows look these up. They're microfilmed, or you can get them there. Get August 6, 1976, an article. The title is The Reigning Guru of the New Right Wing in American Politics. His goal, this is his goal, to gear up and run 200 to 300 congressional races in 1978, 2 years from now. That's a pretty good goal, don't you think? To get in 200 to 300 congressional races in 2 years from now. If this works within 2 years, what he's saying, as I say, the national emergency laws, that's when they get revoked. They get revoked in 2 years, but he would have 300 and maybe already has 200 in Congress, so he would have a clear majority for anything that a president would want. Now, Mr. Vogery, like Tom Charles Huston of the Houston plan, the plan of the military, the Pentagon, the intelligence departments of the United States, the FBI, the CIA, the defense intelligence agencies, were combining to open our mail, take our mail, burglarize our apartments, wiretap, bug, and set electronic devices in the homes, on the phones. This was stopped at the time at the height of Watergate. But Tom Charles Houston and Mr. Vogery have several things in common, and one is their long membership in Young Americans for Freedom. And we have to investigate Mr. Vogery and see whether this young man alone has unlimited money, unlimited computer data banks and information. Are they his, or is he a front for the Domestic Intelligence Division that funds and equips his office? It's in Washington, D.C. now, and there's a picture of him in the Houston Post with some of his equipment. I was just reading a recent article from the Salt Lake Tribune on billing and costs of the Mormons, and they just had a yearly budget of 10 million feet of microfilm. So that's a lot of microfilm, and their data banks link to organizations such as Mr. Richard Vogery's. The domestic police force, in the last few years, the LAPD have been turning over to the intelligence community, and this has been verified and documented, information of people that signed anti-war protests, that went to demonstrations and wrote their name down for the farm workers who helped Cesar Chavez, that were against stopping abortions. Now, these were turned over from the police department to the intelligence community. Now, are all these names sent to Mr. Vogery so that he can keep a list of potential congressmen from certain areas and follow them or discredit them or disrupt them early in the game? There were witnesses that testified, I read on the air, 22 ways to stop Martin Luther King, 21, and then the 22nd was murder. But are there ways to stop young candidates in our community, local community, who've had taken political positions so they never can get into the Democratic Party or the Republican Party as members of their party if they have these files on what everybody did or thought of for the last 12 years? The only one way somebody can run for office today, money for television and newspaper and funding and financing, is be heavily funded. And if these Washington computers have information from the intelligence community throughout every state, then they know who's safe to run and who will vote the way they want, and that is the way Congress can be controlled. And if the Hughes Medical Institute is one example of a dummy front funding these congressmen, and millions of dollars are taken from the Medical Institute, there also is another dummy front called Hughes Dynamics. It opened and it closed, but the information was passed on to Salt Lake City, and Hughes Dynamics was described in that Playboy article this last month, headed by Johnny Meyer, and he alleges that Howard Hughes, even if there was Hughes, I don't think there was, even knew anything about it. It was several million dollars taken tax money, because the Hughes Corporation, the aircraft, is tax dollars come from us, formed a organization called Hughes Dynamics that fed information about police departments and post offices that went directly to computer data banks in Salt Lake City. And that has direct connections to Washington, D.C., and then Mr. Vogery, and then he can select my 1970 again. If he has this through 50 states, I'm just talking about California now, but you can project this. If they do it here, they could do it in 50 states and rule out any possible candidate for Congress, except those, and then get 600 that vote unanimously, like we get a block now, that vote unanimously on issues that they really shouldn't be and know better about, and they vote. So this young man, this Mr. Vogery, is a name that we have to watch, because he has this goal to get people into Congress. He's very open about it. Now, he's done political mailing for George Wallace and Ronald Reagan. He's also done it for Congressman Strom Thurmond, John Tower, and Hank Grover. Now, these three men, Struman, Thurman, Tower, and Grover, are also mentioned in the list of 30 congressmen funded by the Hughes Organization that's in Playboy, and we know Nixon was funded and Ronald Reagan through this conduit of funds of the Hughes Organization. So you get an overlap of Medical Foundation funding them and Mr. Vogery working for them and getting their mailing list. And if he wants to control that Congress by 1978, he says there are a few things he has to do, and one of them, he's going to vote, this is interesting, for Jimmy Carter. He wants to get Gerald Ford out and put Jimmy Carter in. And I think that's an interesting concept, and this is one of his goals, to get Jimmy Carter in office this year. And he's working in Houston, Texas, and in Washington, D.C., and then go for an all-Republican. He said by then they'll be fed up. They'll have enough of the Democrats, and they'll go all Republican, and all Republican congressmen will be voted in. So I imagine they could get Carter in and do all kinds of dirty tricks on him, just like in Los Angeles, certain black people raising money were found taking money from his campaign. And you can have congressmen in bed with women, fix them up on trips, and blackmail them with women and get them embarrassing situations. And these things are happening now. Then expose more of it in 78, let the Democrats have 2 years, and then from then on, it's smooth sailing. Well, because Mr. Vogery is an officer of the YAF, he has a high position in Young Americans for Freedom, and because I've watched that organization since the John Kennedy assassination, I thought that I'd go back into the suppression of the YAF at the time of John Kennedy, and then into Spiro Agnew's foundation that was formed by YAF officer Tom Houston in Indiana that is now spewing anti-Semitic literature. It's being published in Liberty Lobby, the White Power, the American Nazi Party. They're selling Agnew's book. Agnew's the darling of the, not the conservative, but the most fanatical right-wing Nazi military Minutemen organizations and the foundation, the tax-free foundation, like the Hughes Medical Institute, again, our tax dollars are paying for it, are publishing literature, and then it's being picked up in the Cross and Flag, a paper, racist paper that was put out by Gerald L.K. Smith that's still going. And a tax-free foundation is giving Agnew the right through the organization was formed by Tom Charles Houston of the YAF. Well, where did the YAF go from putting people in Congress in 1978? From 1963, it goes back to the Kennedy assassination. I got interested into this group when I was doing my research and going through the testimony, because in volume 18, for your researchers that take this down, volume 18, pages 835 to 898, that's only 63 pages of documents and references and letters from members of YAF. They were specifically a group of right-wing fanatic military intelligence, farther right-wing than the conservative parties in Dallas. These were the people that were throwing things at Adlai Stevenson and spitting on him. Certainly not the typical conservative in Texas, but the fanatical right wing. They're members of military intelligence. 19 of them were mentioned in the Warren Commission hearings. I have a list of references of 19 names, and there are links to the Birch Society and to the CIA and even to Jack Ruby. And the Warren Commission only called one of these people as a witness, Bernard Weissman. And when Bernard Weissman was called as a witness, every member of the Warren Commission, one after the other, got up and left the room and didn't hear the testimony. Volume 15 in the index of the Warren Report, in volume 15 of the 26 volumes, they never mention 11 of these 19 people. 8 are mentioned and 11 are never mentioned by name at all. As I say, Sylvia Marr in the book Accessories After the Fact, she documented the names that were mentioned in the course of hearings before the Warren Commission or in the 26th volume. She didn't mention 15 out of the 19. She only mentioned Larry Schmidt and Bernard Barker and Weissman. And she gave the wrong reference on one other party that was a gross piece of information, a woman, Connie Trammell, who was the link of Jack Ruby to H.L. Hunt, to black money at the Republic National Bank, kill money of the CIA, and to the military intelligence. Sylvia Marr in her index has the name Connie Trammell, and then she has parentheses, an acquaintance of Ruby, exhibit four exhibit numbers she gives for Connie Trammell's name, and she doesn't mention Connie Trammell being at the office of H.L. Hunt, or Connie Trammell's associations with Larry Schmidt from U.S. Military Intelligence, his organization from Munich, Germany, or the motives for Larry Schmidt coming, which were a better motive for killing John Kennedy than Castro would have. Connie Trammell was listed as an acquaintance of Ruby, and yet she worked with YAF infiltrator and Larry Schmidt. Now, the YAF was formed by Douglas Caddy, one of the men working with Howard Hunt at the time of Watergate. He worked in the offices where the Attorney General was planning the burglarizing of offices and also the kidnapping of leftists and taking them to Mexico, and they were planning putting congressmen in bed, I guess getting ready for that big 1976-78 push of blackmailing congressmen and getting the Democratic congressmen out. Larry Schmidt was the leader of an organization called CUSA, leader of a PAC, and they all came from Munich, Germany, into Dallas, and they had under the YF banner. They were a member of a highly select group of men and women. They described themselves as having a great role to play in the future of their country. They said, in quotes, "We're a breed of great men, Americans. We fear no one or no thing." Larry Schmidt said in letters that are in Volume 18 that he was coming to Fort Worth and Dallas area and take over the situation because he was so embarrassed by the Bay of Pigs disaster. They were all stationed in Munich, Germany. And he was so embarrassed by the Bay of Pigs disaster and so disgusted with our government and so humiliated that my German friends teased us. So we recruited and lined up a group starting with Larry Jones, who was a signal code decoder. They left Munich, Germany. Larry Schmidt came November 2nd, 62 to Dallas. He met with Frank McGee, who he described to his cohorts in these letters as anti-Semitic. And he said, "So long as I live, I'm all great, all powerful, all reigning. Whether I go down in history as a great and noble man or a tyrant, I'm determined to be recorded in the history of my times." He wrote to Munich, "To all these men, you get out here. Kennedy's coming. We have to produce the bodies and run." They had a Munich timetable. They said, this is in Volume 18, "We're ahead of our original timetable. Dallas is a battleground. Warren Carroll is our only other member of the YAF CUSA group." CUSA became YAF, and YAF member, their only other member besides military intelligence was Warren Carroll, Jack Ruby's method of control, the CIA man who also wrote Lifeline for H.L. Hunt and maybe still does down in Texas. They ordered Norman to get to the Republic National Bank. That's where Connie Trammell worked. He said, "We're building our credit like crazy for the day we need ready cash. We're storing up our insurance and collateral. Once we get rid of the chairman of the YAF of the Southwest, is all ours." And this same Mr. Vogery that I'm telling you about is from the Southwest, from Houston, Texas, Richard Vigory. He said, "The Southwest is all ours. They have an independent treasury. We have already formulated our strategy for getting rid of the chairman." And they went on in Volume 18 and described what they were going to do. The men and the people they worked with that were embarrassed by Bay of Pigs, that had to produce the bodies and run, that compared themselves to Adolf Hitler, that referred to John Kennedy in the past tense, that were out to get him. They said he embarrassed America. And their letters are exactly the kind of thing that Spiro Agnew is writing now. These men were Larry Schmidt, Volkmar Schmidt, Bernard Weissman, Warren Carroll of the CIA, Robert Morris of the extreme right wing in Dallas, Texas, a Clyde Moore, a Frank McGee. Dale Davenport was U.S. military intelligence, Norman Baker, U.S. intelligence, and Bill Burley came from Germany to Dallas. There was Boyd of Boyce, Art Francois, Ken Glazebrook, Richard Harsh, Larry Jones, Sheila McDonald, Connie Trammell, and James Mosley. Now, it's very funny. I've had taken issue with Mark Lane over the years. I don't know why they're suppressing this. I saw Sylvia Marr in New York last April. She's not interested in the links of these people, the intelligence community. These are the authors on the research and the assassination of John Kennedy that have suppressed this information. And now it is far a thing from the past. There's a description in Volume 23 of Bill Burley, page 496, military training from August to July 63. Then he came to Dallas at the time of the assassination, training in Munich, Germany, military police training, then trained in Georgia. He was trained in Georgia from 61 to 62, sent to Munich, from Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia to Munich, formed an organization at the time because they were mad at the Bay of Pigs and was back at Dallas on orders to get back there, produce the bodies, and run. In other words, Bernard Weissman, who did testify, but not ask these questions, volume 5, page 489. He was trained in Nuclear Development Corps experimental machinist in 1957. He was sent in the Army to Munich, Germany, and then was ordered to come to Dallas to be briefed for the Kennedy assassination. And that's the YAF, and that was the YAF that was infiltrated in the Southwest in 1963 and is far from dead and far from over, because the same Mr. Richard Vogery, who works with the YAF from Houston, Texas, is now in Washington, D.C., with the mailing list of the worst anti-Semites, the worst anti-blacks, the pro-war, and the worst fascists in the United States have not lain dormant. They have used the Mullen Associates in Washington, D.C., and they've used the computers and the data banks, and now they're getting ready to tie up our Congress for 1976, if they can't, 1978, if they can't do it in 76. So the YAF was taken over by military intelligence in the Southwest and also up in Indiana, the same state that Tom Charles Houston came from and where Mr. Agnew is spouting and mouthing his anti-Semitism and encouraging this kind of thinking among the congressmen. That's the same state that is written up in the Penthouse article by O'Toole, Watergate on the Wabash. And again, the states, the cities, the YAF, the Indiana connections to Washington are not very far off, and it was in Indiana where the forming, one part of the SLA was also formed. So you have Vogery in Washington, D.C. getting ready to warm up our Congress to get 200 to 300 in. And then we go to Indiana where co-workers are both executives, top executives of the YAF, and also supported Ronald Reagan through his campaign. Tom Charles Houston not only surfaced at the time of Watergate, but now he's linked to this foundation. It's called the Education for Democracy. If you've ever heard of a mockery, a mockery, it's the Education for Democracy. It's a tax-free foundation paid by you and me. The lawyer who formed it, who did the legal framework, is Tom Charles Houston, who works in the YAF with Mr. Vogery. The articles, I say, of Agnew's are in all the racist literature that's coming out, the White Power, the American Nazi Paper, Liberty Lobby, and other quotations from Kent Courtney and other racists around the country. The institution advocates a buildup of nuclear arms. This is Agnew's foundation, besides just being anti-Semitic. Build up nuclear arms. It's critical of any entente with Russia. It's sympathetic with the refugees in the Middle East. It's very anti-Israel. The legal papers, as I say, were drawn up early in 1970. And this is the interesting thing. While Agnew is the head of the foundation right now, it was formed in 1970 when the same YAF leader, Douglas Caddy, who formed it, and Mr. William Buckley was the other co-founder. Buckley worked in the CIA with E. Howard Hunt, and Buckley and Douglas Caddy in 1960 formed YAF when John Kennedy had the nomination and was giving his inaugural address. And the offices in Washington, D.C. are still, they're not broken apart, but they were transferred to other public relations firms like Timmons & Company. Well, Agnew has come out now, head of the organization that was formed in 70. When YAF wanted Agnew for president, they had told Richard Nixon that he had to take Agnew as vice president. They intended Agnew to be the president of the United States, and this team was always behind Agnew. And I always thought that the Watergate was to get Nixon out of order and out of office, and Nixon pulled a quick one, and Agnew went first. But Agnew now has gone back to the foundation. But imagine if Agnew were president, the Houston plan was going, and the SLA was formed on the West Coast and around the country to get the radicals. Imagine the mesh that we would be in if there hadn't been that scotch tape at Watergate, and we still have to be alert. This newspaper is coming out with articles. They have a regular newspaper now that they put out that is, it's called The Alternative, and it's quoted around the country by these hate groups. And they're against people in this country that are doing nothing. This is Spiro Agnew's great quotation just last week in a newsletter. I'm tired of waiting, and you probably are too, for the producers to be recognized as more important than consumer. for the credibility of American military men to devote their lives to protecting their country, to prevail over the propaganda of American sworn enemies, an end to the debilitating preoccupation with race. In other words, this is translated, the credibility of the men to protect the country. We shouldn't criticize the military men for bringing in drug traffic or the genocide they're doing or the torturing or the napalm. We have to defend the credibility of the American men. He wants to stop this preoccupation with race and get on and forget the busing, forget the civil rights, and let's not think so much about black and white and get on to the real problems. Mr. Agnew is now, what he says, interested in getting involved in public issues. So he's using the Tax-Free Foundation as a vehicle to express his views, and they're being met all around the country. Jack Anderson had an article just about a week or so about Agnew, and he said he intimated that there'll be more to come from Agnew. He said his vitriolic self is going to appear because his probation ends October the 10th in 3 years, and then he has the mouthpiece to speak what he wants to say. Well, I had a lot to say about YAF in my first article in 1972, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped, linking it to the Mullen Associates, the Watergate, and back to the Kennedy killings, and asking in the article, where is Larry Schmidt, where is Volkmar Schmidt, where are these men that came from Munich, Germany? And then in the article I did in 1974, The SLA is the CIA, I talked about the foundation in Indiana under the biography of Emily William Harris, that they attended at the University of Indiana, a College of Foreign Affairs, a think tank. And Tom Charles Houston of the YAF was working in Indiana with student groups that were so far right that they were going into counterintelligence and not just being plain conservatives, and I think plain in quotes. And I think it would be good to look up further as much as we can. The information I got was from Alex Bottis, who worked with the Indiana State Police. But Tom Charles Houston worked in Indiana and worked with the same group, the College of Foreign Affairs, the University of Indiana in Bloomington. And that's where Emily and William Harris were until they came to California in 1972. And in the article I did, the SLA is CIA, I went into a long introduction on why Patty Hearst was kidnapped and said that the right-wing groups, such as the American Nazi Party, the Ku Klux Klan, the Minutemen, the National States Rights Party, are fronts for the CIA and the FBI operation. And that's a very important link because now these organizations are using Spiro Agnew's speeches. And every organization that I had in mind, and I compared it to their symbol of the cobra in Chicago, they're letting this cobra loose. I had it in my chronological order, the symbolism of those extremist parties letting the story out that was the beginning of the SLA, and that was their symbol in Chicago. And then we have in Indiana this foundation that these people came from. And the thing that was important about the SLA was it launched the links to the Korean CIA, to Reverend Moon, bringing Reverend Moon over here. There were people involved in the SLA that were responsible for bringing Reverend Moon to this country after the SLA got off the ground. And it was supposed to be a comparison of American radicals. And Wes Davis was the agent in charge of that operation who became the expert on the SLA. And I had written about that. And Angela Atwood and her husband came out to California, and he split. He wasn't here when she was killed, but there was a lot of mystery about her death and her killing and the circumstances of how these individuals, the Atwoods and the Harrises, came from Indiana, from an institute such as that where all four were trained. And you see that Tom Charles Houston was working with those students and came to the California area where they went immediately to the United Farm Workers, the Vietnam Against the War, the United Prisoners Union, went to see Doc Holliday, so that the very viable, explosive areas that the COINTEL program wanted infiltrated, these people came out. Angela Atwood went to work immediately at the Bank of America building, the tower as a waitress, and William Harris was at the post office. And Emily Harris was at a polling office at Berkeley that I still believe was a dummy front. So the YAF was active in 1970 in Indiana, the same time that the gentleman that did the legal work to set up that tax foundation was getting ready, and Spiro Agnew became now the head of this foundation. And the goals are just layers upon layers of research that I've done, that the chickens are all coming home to roost, and it's no coincidence that now Agnew is being quoted by these racists, or that those military intelligence Nazis that were covered up by every member of the Warren Commission, by every major researcher except for myself that has constantly talked about them, linked to the YAF. Oh, David Miller down in Florida has done that too and done work on the YAF and the links to Watergate. And I think now we have to watch Richard Vogery. We have to watch our Congress. And I'll be writing some articles on this because if a man can use these computers and data banks and get Congress in his control in 1978, then that is the end of the congressional body as we know it and the Constitution as it was intended. That's it for this week on Dialogue Conspiracy. This is Mae Brussel. I'll see you next week. Have a good week, and we'll see you next Monday.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for many years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California.